You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. In 2021, Western North America suffered a massive heat dome, hotter than all records for that time of year. It was a major event in climate change, accompanied by drought and massive wildfires. In British Columbia alone, hundreds of people died of unbearable heat. How bad was it? Just published in the journal Science Advances this paper, "The 2021 Western North America Heat Wave, Among the Most Extreme Events Ever Recorded Globally." The lead author is Dr. Vicky Thompson, Senior Research Associate at the School of Geographical Sciences, University of Bristol in the UK. From Bristol, Vicky Thompson, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Attribution of these weird weather events relative to climate, it's getting faster and faster. Experts are learning in to hone in on these localized and fast-moving events. What were your thoughts when you heard about the heat dome in Western North America in that June of 2021, and how did that get to the top of your to-do list scientifically?
Well, when the event happened, it was shocking, the magnitude that we saw. It was almost five degrees hotter than had previously been experienced in that area. And that sounds impossible before it happened. So straight away, I was interested in whether this could happen elsewhere and whether maybe it had already happened elsewhere, that maybe parts of the world where we weren't documenting the records so well and less people lived, so it wasn't impacting as many people. We decided to see whether that was the case, and there were other heat waves that had been as large, but without the severe impacts that we saw from the North American heat wave.
Yes, a heat event doesn't provide moving news footage like a tornado or a cyclone, but extreme heat kills more people by far than storms do. Why do you think it is we know so little about the history of very extreme heat?
Yeah, I was surprised. This was the deadliest event in Canadian history, deadliest weather event in Canadian history. So that shows just how severe the impacts of these events can be. But the impacts are getting larger year on year as the impacts get bigger. So historically, heat won't have been such a major issue, particularly in Canada and northern US. But we can see it starting to have increasing impacts on agriculture, infrastructure, and everybody's lives.
Right. My studio is near the epicenter of that big heat burst last June. About a third of my garden died despite watering and care and shading and everything I could do. Everyone hid indoors with air conditioning blasting, and we worried about the fires that were around us. It seemed like a historic climate-driven event. Can we really call it that?
Well, I think our work shows that. It was one of the biggest events ever seen. But surprisingly, it's not the greatest heat wave. There were some bigger ones historically, and unfortunately we are going to have to start preparing for these events becoming much more regular, and they'll become less memorable as they start happening more often.
There's some interesting bits in your paper about the relationship between drought and heat. Scientists at the Helmholtz Center for Environmental Research in Leipzig, they published a paper in March 2022 about compound hot-dry events. How does drought-dry ground push temperatures even higher?
So when the ground is drier, any heat in the air will go straight into, or any energy in the air will go straight into heating up the air. We won't need to use any of that energy to heat up the water. And water can absorb quite a lot of energy. It takes quite a bit of energy to heat up, evaporate the puddles and the groundwater away. So the less water that's around, the faster the energy will act to heat up the atmosphere instead, which will drive the temperatures up much faster in a dry condition. And indeed, the Western North America region had its driest June in record, so since 1950, preceding the heat wave last year.
But you did find atmospheric conditions, not drought, were the biggest driver of the Western heat storm. And here we get into something called planetary waves. I think our public understands the jet stream, but less about what a planetary wave is. Could you discuss those for us?
Yes, appeared that the planetary wave that affected this event originated in the North Atlantic, and it was a wave of pressure around the globe. So there were low pressure and high pressure, and then low pressure and then high pressure going all the way around the globe, leading to a high pressure area over that region that experienced the hot air. So that was the heat dome, that high-pressure area. And they can be triggered by all sorts of things. So this one was in the North Atlantic. It might have been a slightly anomalous wind pattern or slightly warmer water. And then there's this atmospheric wave triggered that, in this case, appeared to go all the way around the world.
According to a map in your paper, the June 2021 heat storm over Western Canada and the United States was just one of five bubbles of heat there. And is that a wave five state of planetary waves? Is that unusual? Do scientists expect to see more of them as the world heats up 2 degrees or more?
It was the intensity of this one that's surprising. So that sort of atmospheric circulation pattern would be fairly common. It would happen quite often. But the magnitude of that high-pressure system over North America was exceptional. That was the highest pressure for that region in our record since 1950 for that time of year. It might be slightly earlier in the year than is often expected, as the heat wave was earlier than that sort of heat is expected in that area.
I just want to be sure we're clear on this. Is the planetary wave different than those great big bends and waves we see in the jet stream, or do the two relate to one another? What do you think?
Yeah, the two are linked. So it's all higher atmospheric patterns and how they circulate around the world. They're linked. So the location of the jet stream could help influence it as well.
Your study begins with heat records since 1968. Surely people around the world have been recording temperatures daily for over 100 years. Why did you not compare our current heat waves with what our grandparents experienced going back further?
The data that we chose to use is available from the 1950s. This is a data set of the whole of the globe, and it's hard to get such data sets that cover everywhere from much earlier. So this data set was Era 5 from the ECMWF in Europe. And it's a global data set of temperature, there's other variables as well, that's spatially complete all the way through from 1950s onwards. So some of that is from observations, but there's gaps in the observations, particularly in, say, parts of Africa. So those are filled in with forecasting models as well. So although there are observations from some locations going much further into history, there isn't as much of a globally complete data set, which is why we only started from the 1950s.
And your study shows last June's heat storm over the West, as you said, was not really the most shocking change from normal in the last few decades. Where was the record set?
So we found the number one global heat wave was from Southeast Asia in 1998. That event was linked to the El Nino conditions of that year. And it was, in fact, 16 days from a month that all showed heat more extreme than was seen in the Western North America heat wave. And by extreme, we mean extreme compared to the normal local conditions. So it's in terms of standard deviation of the local conditions rather than just the absolute magnitude of the heat wave.
What is a standard deviation?
The data we assume can be thought of as a normal distribution, which is that more of the data will be around the mean and then there'll be less towards the tails, and mathematicians have a term, standard deviation. So, 60% of about 60% of the data will be within one standard deviation of the mean value. So, the further out, the more standard deviations we are, the further from the mean the point is. And in fact, I think it's 0.1% of data is beyond three standard deviations. And the Western North America event was 3.6 standard deviations. So it's in very, very far tails of what would be expected. I think it's 1 in 1,000 event from being that deviated from the mean.
Well, prior to climate change, we might have assumed that such a rare event would be rare and perhaps not come again for hundreds of years. But now it looks like it could happen more often. What do you think about that?
Yeah, one of the things that we look at is using a climate model. We look at how likely the event would be in the future. So using this climate model, we find that in the current world, it's a 1 in 5,000 year event, so 0.02% likelihood of happening. So it was a very unusual event. But if we look out to the end of the century, we find it becomes a 1 in 6 year or a 16% likelihood event, so much more frequent. I do need to say that with a caveat, because we're using a model that has a high climate sensitivity, which means it warms up faster than some of the other climate models around. But we felt that we should use that one to show the worst-case scenario of what could happen, because that model could be an accurate representation of the future.
From my interviews, that sounds like the path we are currently on. But as you say, we could take a turn and slash our emissions and take some actions and possibly not get to the worst-case scenario, but we need to know what it is. Now, you just talked about the heat event in Southeast Asia. We'll talk about, like, Cambodia, Thailand, Laos, maybe the Philippines in Southeast Asia, but you previously led a study on unprecedented hot months in Southeast China. So South China, too, is looking at more extreme heat?
Yes, we found in that one that, or like everywhere globally, more extremes are likely to happen as we go into the future. I don't think there'll be anywhere that the climate models would suggest are going to see less extremes into the future.
I wonder if the extreme heat recently striking Pakistan and northern India will show up in a study soon.
Yeah, we've been thinking about that in the last week. In our study, we find that India and Pakistan have a fairly low extreme currently. So it almost looks as if they've been quite lucky not to have a more extreme event yet. So, and what's happening at the moment, it looks like they are experiencing that larger extreme that our work maybe suggests is quite likely for that area.
Yes, you do warn that some places have been lucky so far. They may not have been hit with record bursting heat, but that may well come. So what is the worry there? Can you give us any examples as well?
Yeah, India is one of those regions, and there's some regions in Central Africa and also parts of Australia. And one of our biggest worries with those areas is they haven't experienced extreme heat yet, so they're not as prepared as some areas. So in Western North America, now it's been experienced, people maybe know what to expect better if it happens again, and know that the impacts, what impacts are going to happen and how to protect themselves. But in these places that have been lucky, the people won't be so aware of the health impacts of the heat and how to protect themselves and what they need to be looking out for when the heat comes. So it could be that the impacts could be much greater just due to lack of awareness and lack of preparedness for the event.
Yes, we were not prepared in British Columbia. I mean, it's Canada, and it's a coastal Canada, and things just don't get that hot. Some people don't have air conditioning. A lot of people don't have AC on the coast, for sure. And we didn't have cooling centers. We didn't have a warning system set up. The government didn't think that could happen. So it does show how we need to raise our preparedness, and I think your science helps us do that.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Dr. Vicky Thompson from the University of Bristol, UK. Your work shows the importance of what we choose as normal. If we say normal comes from averages and records during the previous decade, well, it looks like maybe extreme heat events don't increase much more as the world warms. But if we look at what people a few decades ago experienced, there will be more superheat events to worry about in the future. Did I get that right? Did I understand it correctly?
Yes, that's right. So compared to the previous decade, we find that there's no trend in the extremes. They are staying the same compared to the climatology. But obviously the climatology is increasing through time. We see that climate change is warming the world. So as the world warms, the extremes will get greater.
A problem for our listeners, though, is that a skeptic or a very conservative person could read this paper and almost conclude that heat events won't get that much worse with climate change, whereas someone else sees a gravely increased risk in your results. How would you summarize your findings for the future of extreme heat?
Well, we show that extremes are projected to get more frequent and more intense, and I doubt anybody could see that as a good situation to be in.
Are there some places we could all move to and feel immune to extreme heat waves?
Well, the way we're looking at the extremes, we're comparing them to the local climatology. So if you move somewhere colder, the extremes would be smaller in magnitude. But what our work shows is that the extremes will still be greater, greater compared to what that area is used to. So humans might be able to adapt by moving, but there's so much more to the world. The ecosystems, they can't just relocate to an area where it's a bit cooler, so the extremes aren't so great. In the event in Western North America, lots of ecosystems will be affected. The wildfires will have savaged the forests, and I know lots of the coastal intertidal regions have lost a lot of their the range of species. That sort of impact we can't adapt for as easily just by moving to a better place.
As I understand it, your new research used two major classes of tools, climate models and reanalysis. What is reanalysis, and how does that help us understand recent and maybe future extreme heat?
So we use a reanalysis product, which is close to an observational product. It allows us to have a complete data set for the whole of the world, going all the way back to 1950, which merges the observations and the best forecasting models to fill in any gaps where we don't have observations. So that product is available historically from the 1950s. There are some that go further back in time, but we chose to use one from the 1950s. So they go all the way up to the present day and allow you to look at extremes all across the globe, even in areas where the observational records aren't so accurate.
And there are hurricane centers keeping records for big storms around the world. We have storm chasers and terrific statisticians like Bob Henson of the Weather Underground. Is there an international organization or consortium tracking big heat events?
Not as far as I'm aware of. One of the hard problems with that would be it's very hard to define a heat wave globally. There is an attempt to define it as anywhere where the temperature is above 40 degrees and a certain amount above normal for a certain amount of days. But I live in the UK. Where I live, 40 degrees would be astounding. It's a heat wave when it's much cooler than that. So it's hard to have a global measure for it. But each country, there's lots of countries, meteorological centers do have a more localized record of heat waves.
It's interesting you say that, because I talked to a Greek scientist who said, well, and he was in northern Australia as well, measuring heat waves there. He said, we get a hot day in Greece that would cause all sorts of alarms in Britain. People would be leaving their jobs and heading for the beaches if they got the same weather. So there is an adaptation of populations to what they expect. And I think that's one of the important parts of this paper, is that the unexpected can happen now.
Yes, I'm sure nobody was expecting the temperatures that were experienced last summer in Western North America.
One of our villages burned down.
Yeah, that was Lytton, wasn't it? That was the location of that 4.6 degrees warmer than had ever been recorded anywhere in Canada.
So, Vicky, you're involved in using complex tools to analyze mountains of data. You publish climate papers in some of the top journals. But as far as I can see, you were not trained as a climatologist. Your doctorate is in philosophy. How and why did you make this transition into hard climate science?
The term doctorate in philosophy is just the UK's term for a science degree. So I did do a PhD in meteorology.
I was totally taken in by that. I'm glad you cleared that up. I think our North American listeners will get it. What are you working on next?
Well, I'm hoping to continue working on these global heat waves and looking into some of those regions which I've been lucky so far not to experience the heat waves. So to look at the risks in those areas to help understand what could happen and whether those areas are likely to see the record-smashing events that we've seen elsewhere.
The one that makes me the most nervous is if two out of the three breadbaskets, as they call them, are hit at the same time. We had in 2010 the Russian heat wave where Russia stopped exporting wheat, which drove a famine and some say revolution in North Africa just for lack of food. But it was okay in North America. But if North America and Russia and other parts of the world like India, who produce a lot of wheat, are all hit at the same time, then we're in big trouble.
Yes, that's a really interesting area of research. I was involved with some work looking at provinces in China, looking at the food security just across China and whether multiple regions of China could be affected at the same time by hot and dry conditions at the wrong times for the crops there. But similar studies could be applied to multiple regions to look at the risk of the States and Russia experiencing cold or hot at the wrong time for the crops. And that's definitely an area that needs more research.
From the University of Bristol, we've been speaking with Dr. Vicki Thompson, Senior Research Associate at the School of Geographical Sciences. You can find links to this new open access paper. That means it's free for you to read. And it's about extreme heat, and it's in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Vicki, thank you for sharing your work with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to this latest attempt at climate truth. Next week, we have more science, of course, but also Britt Ray, author of Generation Dread.